and welcome to another episode of After Class, a medical ethics podcast. We aren't philosophers, we aren't ethicists, we aren't even doctors yet. We are just a group of medical students trying to find our way in the crazy world of medicine. We are a group of medical students at Sydney Kimmel Medical College of Thomas Jefferson University. While there are a lot of sources of information out there, from literature to the media, we hope to be a casual, free-form space to have some open, honest, and thought-provoking conversation. All views expressed on this podcast are personal to the participants. They are not the views of Thomas Jefferson University or any of its controlled affiliates. Today, we'll be having a candid conversation about humility in medicine with a very special guest. Joining us today is Dr. Jeffrey Bailiff, Clinical Assistant Professor and Director of Pathology Education for the first 2 years at Sydney Kimmel Medical College. He is someone who many of us medical students are very fond of, but it is not just his repertoire of knowledge that has captivated us. It is the way he presents it, his deep love for understanding how things work, the way he conducts himself and shows us what a great clinician is. And one of the words that comes to mind is humility. This idea that it's not about me, but about all of us, recognizing the dignity in every person. This deep mission to learn and expand our knowledge without letting ego weigh us down. Humility is arguably one of the most powerful character traits of any person, especially a physician. Yet as learners, it is something we hardly hear about. No one is an expert on this, definitely not me at least, but I'm very glad that you can join us today to have this conversation.
Thank you for inviting me so much. I'm really honored. Excited to do this. I've never done a podcast before.
We are excited to have you. So I know this is a really big topic, but I wanted to start off by asking you about your thoughts about humility and your personal experiences with humility in medicine.
Sure. That's a big question. I guess, you know, where to begin? I guess first I want to start off by saying, you know, it's very humbling to be invited to a podcast to talk about humility and to be put up as a person who exemplifies humility, because I have to be completely honest, and that is, so I'm in my upper 40s now, and you know, it's been a journey getting here, and it's going to be a journey going forward. But let's just say that you and your fellow medical students see me in the classroom, and I am a certain way, and in many ways I feel like I'm my best self when I'm in the classroom. But it would be disingenuous for me to say that I haven't made mistakes in my life, and that there have been times in my life where I have not acted humble at all, and to very bad effect. So I just want to be very honest about that. I am very much human, and while I am flattered and honored to be called humble in some respects, I just want to be very honest that there have been mistakes that have been made, and I've learned from them. So to get more specific to your question about like my journey in humility, And it is very much tied to my love of the classroom and learning and teaching, is that when I look at my life up to now, and I realized this when I was much younger, is the people that mattered most to me, the people that impacted me the most, and the times where I felt most alive is when I was with great teachers. And I am talking about, you know, people whose occupation was being a teacher, but I'm also talking about, you know, just camp counselors or sports teachers or friends that taught me stuff, when they had the patience to take somebody who didn't know something and then move their life forward in a way or enhance it, meaning me, it just went to my core. And so I've always loved that, and I've always appreciated it, and I've always thought that that's sort of one of the most important things in life. And then, so you go through school, kindergarten through, high school, and then go to college, and that was all wonderful. I have to be honest, I'm not saying it's unique to the medical profession at all. I know it's not, but once I got to medical school, and definitely after, I started coming into contact with, this culture of medicine that, has been written about for decades, about how there are aspects to it that are malignant, or let's just say not so great. And I started working with very highly, even before medical school. I should say that between college and medical school, I was, quote, out in the real world for 5 years. And I've worked with a lot of some famous people. I don't want to name anybody, but MacArthur Genius Grant Award recipients and very well-published people. And I started to become, let's just say, more familiar with ego and condescension and power dynamics and things like that. And I will say, I happen to be, some people think I may have a very hard exterior, but I am soft as, melted butter inside. And so that kind of thing really affected me. And so I don't want to drone on here, but I'd say that my love of learning and my love of teaching and teachers, combined with this experience of ego and power, affected me very early on. And said, I made a very conscious decision. I said, if I ever, ever am in a position where I can teach, or I have some kind of say in anybody else's growth, that I would never be like that. I would never, never want somebody to be, hurt emotionally in any way by my actions, which should be, nourishing and not discouraging. I'll just pause there, but so that's a very sort of general answer to your question, I hope.
Yeah, that actually reminds me of a concept by Jim Collins on successful leadership. He describes a hierarchy where the highest type of leader a person can be is one who builds lasting greatness through this paradoxical combination of personal humility and professional will. That will and commitment to the pursuit of a vision is not foreign in medicine. But humility seems to be that extra missing component. One thing you mentioned that stuck out to me was that conscious decision. How do you really maintain that? What is your approach to life?
Good question. So I have to say that I would never, and the goal and the vision is never to be humble. Like, and I know this it sounds shocking. Like, it's never in my mind that my goal is to be humble. That's never the goal. I mean, it's a great goal to have, but I guess what I'm saying is, my goal in my life is, and especially in my job, is I want the people around me to be at ease. I want to be at ease. In many ways, it's like it's you know, I, in many ways, it's I may misquote the sort of saying, but you want to treat others like you want to be treated. The goal, every day of my life is to be comfortable, have as little stress as possible. You know, there is good stress and bad stress, but I think everybody knows what I mean. To feel like your life has meaning and that you're moving forward in it. And I guess what I want more than that is I want to be inspired and I want to get the most out of this life that I can. And I don't, you know, with all due respect to people who may believe in life after death or other kind of visions, I'm not sure about any of that, but I am sure about this life. And I want to have the best life possible. And so the goal is to have as many people around me, even again, you know, let's just be honest. I don't know the names of every single medical student here at Jefferson that I teach, but that doesn't matter to me. I mean, you know, I want everybody around me to enjoy themselves and to feel like they're growing and to be not stressed and to be, I don't like the word happy. I'm not a, this is going to sound strange. I'm not a big fan of happiness. I'm a big fan of being satisfied and feeling at peace. And so that's what I want. And so that's my goal. My goal is never to be humble. My goal is to make sure that all those other things, I'm participating in the sort of encouragement of all those other things. And in my experience, the people who are not humble, and we can talk, you know, I don't want to go off topic too much, but there are certain people throughout history who certainly have not been humble, but they've been major players in changing the world. And we could talk about that kind of dynamic about like a Steve Jobs or an Elon Musk or various other people. I wouldn't call them humble, but there's certain that may help them do some major things. But that's not my goal. My goal is for each individual that I'm lucky enough to come in contact with in life, just to feel comfortable and to get what they, you know, to I guess the other thing, I'm blabbing here, but the other thing, you know, in my particular field of pathology is I get, for whatever reason, I get a big rush from understanding. And I happen to believe that most people do. And I may be wrong about that, but I believe that when you understand something, that even if it has nothing to do with science or medicine, it increases one's, let's just say, happiness or sense of satisfaction. And so, that's my goal. And as a byproduct, if I do it correctly, then humility is just a byproduct of that. Did that answer anything?
Yes, I actually really like that definition of how for your humility is this byproduct, something that just comes with your mission, which is beyond that. So I wanted to turn the conversation to something that's almost a little bit the opposite of humility, and that's the sense of not feeling like you're enough and this imposter syndrome that is common among many people, but especially during these early years of medical school where you're, focusing on learning as much as you can and understanding everything that there is in our human body and its diseases. It definitely humbles you. It definitely shows you how much you don't know. But I think there's also this growing sense of inadequacy that people tend to feel. And not just within our learning, but at least I can speak for myself that I came into medical school over a year ago with very wide and naive eyes and slowly started to see more of the disillusioning realities of where we are working. And up until this point, I had been taught from a young age to sublimate my ego and to always be on this quest for knowledge and that character is the most important attribute of a human and to always extend compassion to others. But the recent events occurring in our nation, the plights of our less fortunate neighbors, and unfortunately, the hubris of our most educated class all come to this disappointment in me. And it kind of led to this feeling of feeling lost and doubtful of myself. And I think there's a lot of people that kind of relate to that. So I wanted to ask you, what do you think that balance between having humility and having this hunger for knowledge versus also maintaining your sense of self-worth and understanding what your place is?
Okay. All right. So I'm gonna break that down. So the first thing about imposter syndrome, and I know, you know, I think you've received talks about it or will, or, and I've never watched any of those talks. I don't know what you've been told, or, but I'll just give you my view. It's going to sound crazy again, but I'm a big fan of imposter syndrome. I know that people can feel inadequate or insecure and nervous, especially as a medical student. And currently you're in your second year. But that gets, it gets even more intense in your third year. I mean, just as a funny anecdote, this happens to most medical students. I'm not really sure why, but it certainly happened to me where, you know, I was shadowing a primary care physician and he sent me in with a patient and, you know, you try to take a history and a lot of patients, they digress a lot. And getting a coherent history with all the relevant pieces of information can be very challenging. But I have no idea why my preceptor allowed me to, but I spent about 40 minutes with this patient who was in no rush. And I was really trying to assemble a coherent history. The patient had multiple medical problems, and I thought I had done a good job, and I certainly had enough time. And then, and I don't remember the details, but then my preceptor comes in, and I give him basically the bullet of the history that I obtained. And then my preceptor, like, he asked one pointed question. And then the patient just revealed this whole other highly, highly relevant piece of information that they just didn't reveal to me. And it was like the key to his whole problem. And it's not like I didn't ask, but I just don't know, you know. And so at that moment, I felt like the smallest person in this world. I was just like, I don't understand. I just spent 40 minutes trying to do a really great job. And my preceptor comes in with one, you know, scalpel-like question. He got right to the heart of the matter. And I just felt like I'm never going to be good at this. Anyway, the point is, in most fields, but especially in medicine, there's just so much information. It's always changing, and it's not easy. I mean, it's just a lot of information. And would I say that I feel like an imposter now? I wouldn't say I feel like an imposter, but I certainly don't feel secure. You know, I feel better. You know, I've been an attending physician for 10 years, and I do remember when I first started out, physically sweating over some cases, and that happens less and less, but it still happens. And I don't mind that. I think imposter syndrome, if it gets in the way of you sleeping, of being healthy, of you being able to do what eventually is going to be your job, that is a problem that needs to be worked on. But I guess for me, I embrace it. I embrace not knowing something. And I do remember in medical school, I consciously said to myself that you need to be comfortable being wrong. You need to be comfortable not knowing. You need to be comfortable with uncertainty. You just need to be comfortable standing there in front of your attending or your upper level resident and just say, I don't know. And just ride the wave, and go with the flow. And then look up what you don't know and read about it. And that's, it's hard work and it's constant and it doesn't end when you get out of medical school. And I mean, everyone, you all know this, they call it lifelong learning. And it changes. I just had to take my board exams again. You know, I have to take them every 10 years. Highly nervous, you know, and but I studied and everything's fine. But I just have to say that, you know, learning is something that I love doing. And so being wrong or not knowing is also something that I love. And I guess that's part of being humble is recognizing there's really no reason why you or I should know everything or understand everything. There's just there's that's just not the case. And even here's so this is the second part of your question that I wanted to get to is you know, what's going on in the world now and how maybe our educated class is some we should say some people in who are very educated treat others, or you know, what I want to get to is the fact that there are people in the world that are going to attack you. They're going to smell blood when they sense that you don't know the answer, or you don't understand something completely, or they're going to have their own agenda, or they're going to have their own psychology that they need to feel superior over you, or for whatever reason they think it's a strategy that by humiliating someone, it will force them to learn and perform at a higher level. And for some people, that does work. For me, it certainly doesn't, and I don't feel good doing that. I feel like most people thrive not by being told, oh, it's okay that you don't know anything, it's okay that you don't learn anything. That's not okay. But I think most people thrive when you say, hey, it's complicated. And I see that you're uncertain. Guess what? I was uncertain too. And I had to spend a lot of time trying to figure this out. And this is what I figured out. So, you know, I guess that's what I would say. I'm not sure if I answered your question, but I mean, there's more that I could say on this. It's just, you know, there's a quote that I heard from Bono, the lead singer of U2, that the truth is I never heard him say this. So take this with a grain of salt because maybe he didn't say it, but I still like it. And supposedly he said, you know, just to be yourself is a successful rebellion. And whether or not he said it, I love it. And you know, there's so much static going on in our world, and it probably is just going to increase with the amount of connectivity and apps and instantaneous news and everything. And in the face of all of that, all the messages, all the rancor and all the fighting and all the images of what you're supposed to be and what you're supposed to do, just trying to check in with yourself and figure out who that is, first of all, and then stick to it. If you're successful at that, that's a huge accomplishment. Now, how that relates to imposter syndrome and everything is to me, I think, one and the same. To be able to stand up tall and say, I don't know, but I'm going to figure it out. That's a successful rebellion against the static, against negative attitudes, against people who want to feel more powerful than you just to feel more powerful. And so I just, that's what I encourage. And that's how I go through my day. You know, there are definitely people who make assumptions about me because of my rank or because of my field. I'm a pathologist, I'm not supposed to like people. I know all the assumptions that are made, and I just stand tall, and I am who I am, and I'm basically somebody who loves to learn how things work and loves to understand mechanism, but I don't understand everything at all. And I'm constantly going back to not only current journals, but textbooks that I had as a medical student, although I'm getting updated versions, but editions. But it's just, you have to let it go. You have to let imposter syndrome go, unless it's really getting in the way of your health. In that case, you have to seek some kind of counseling or meditation or therapy, or call me up and we'll talk through it, you know. But I embrace imposter syndrome.
I love your take on this, and this is such a fresh perspective to have. And I love the idea of embracing the imposter syndrome, embracing not knowing and still standing tall. And I think this is something that I'm going to take with me very personally and continue working on figuring out how to be comfortable with the uncertainty and comfortable with this journey of lifelong learning. So thank
It's my
you for
pleasure.
that. And with that being said, do you have any last advice or any kind of encouraging words for us medical students?
Oh man, I have a yeah, I do. And I guess it would be an ask. And the ask is, you know, when you're a medical student, or at least when I was a medical student, I felt, well, let me put it this, let me go back a little bit. Before I was a medical student, so, you know, I went to college and I didn't, when I went to college, I didn't think I wanted to become a doctor. I had friends, you don't want to talk about imposter syndrome. All my friends who were pre-med in college, I felt were way smarter than me, way more type A than me. And I looked at them and I'm like, hey, if that's what it's going to take, I was very much into English literature and philosophy and humanities and stuff, and so I was like, ah, okay, that's not going to be on the list. So I wasn't pre-med in college, and then it took me 5 years to try to figure out what I wanted to do and to figure out that I did want to go into medicine. But during those 5 years, I bounced around a lot. And one of the places I ended up was in Boston, which is one of the medical meccas of this country, with Harvard and Mass General Hospital and Brigham and Women's and lots of stuff going on there. It's also a big biotech startup place. So what I started doing is, and I will answer the question, I promise, but I started volunteering at Mass General. Because I just figured I wanted to be around doctors and just be in the environment. And at night I was taking my pre-med classes. But I was volunteering at Mass General, usually very late at night in the emergency room, and my job was transporting patients. But there was really nowhere to sit for the volunteers that were there. There was nowhere for us to be. There was no one told us where we should be. So we just kind of like literally would stand against the wall and just wait until a patient was ready to be transferred. And so, you know, residents, attending physicians would be walking by, and we're just literally like a fly on the wall. And, you know, I could tell like no one knew our names, even though we had name tags on. They made us wear these really horribly colored salmon pink coats, which I really hated, but I felt like I was treated like nothing. You know, I know I was there, just I didn't hold any kind of illusion about my job and the importance of it, and I had no illusion. You know, I was there to just move patients from one place, patient to one location to another, but I felt like the doctors there really just felt like, this is who I am. I'm going to be this nobody for the rest of my life. Like I don't deserve to have a name or anyone to say, how are you? I mean, I spent a lot of hours there. It wasn't just like 1 hour a week. I was there a lot. And nobody was overtly mean to me, but it was just like, it was almost as though I was a ghost. And that's always stuck with me. To meaning the answer to your what I want to my ask is what, let me back up. So what I wanted to say is, as a medical student, when I was a medical school student, I always felt like I was going to be a medical student forever. Like it just was going on a long time. And I also felt like my residents and some, not all residents, but some residents just feel like you're always going to be a medical student. They refer to you as the medical student. Where's my medical student? It's like you don't have a name. And that always stuck with me. I was like, I don't understand why you're calling me the medical student. My name's Jeff. You know, can you call me Jeff? I didn't say that, but that's what I felt. And so my ask is for you for you and everyone to internalize the fact that you are going to one day very soon, even though it may not seem like that, you're going to be a resident. Then you may be a fellow if you choose to do that, and you're going to be an attending. You may be in academic medicine, you may be in community medicine. It doesn't matter. But my ask is, no matter what you become, you know, there's a lot of pressure in our society, in our field, for you to make a name for yourself and to become a very important person, a VIP. And I understand the phrase VIP. I get it. I can't deny that it's here in our world and it's never going to go away. It's been there from biblical times and before biblical times. It's there in our non-human primate relatives, okay? Status and differentiation, you know, people being of different status is a hallmark in our. I'm just going to say it, in our genes. It's probably responsible for the size of our brains. We have to keep track of everyone's status, who's above me, who's below me. So I get it. But my ask is for you to remember what it feels like as a medical student, for you to remember what it feels like to be uncertain and to be nervous about it, for you to always remember. See, I'm choking up because, like, I don't feel. I gotta take a sip of tea. Hold on one second. You will be approached by family members, by students, by lay people, by a tour guide on your trip to Italy someday who says, "You know, I got this lump. Can you take a look at it? I mean, this has happened to me." And my ask is that you remember what it felt like, and that no matter who that person is, if you have lots of power over that person due to your position, whatever it is, that you remember what it feels like, and you don't do a power play. You don't call that person the medical student. You learn their name, you talk to them like a human being, and you realize that they are not going to remain who they are for all eternity. All right, especially a medical student. In a very short order, they will be a practicing physician, and they may be seeing, I mean, this shouldn't be anybody's motivation, but you might be seeing them in the emergency room one day as a patient. And just so think about that. I mean, karma is very real, in my opinion. And that shouldn't be your motivation for treating people right so that your karma's increased. It should just be your motivation because they're a human being. And I just think, especially in academic medicine, there's a lot of emphasis on your status, on your rank, on the politics, and that's not going to go away. But my ask is that we get more people out there in the world who do that successful rebellion that I talked about later, earlier, and that's be yourself, remember where you came from, and be humble about what you know and what you don't know, and don't be ashamed about it, but do your work and just treat everybody, you know, kindly. And I think that's the best answer I can give.
Thank you so much. This call to action is really something that at least I personally will take to heart and not let power get to me and stand tall and talk to everyone I meet as a human being with inherent value in themselves as a human. And I think that might be one of the biggest challenges, yet one of the most successful things that we can do. So thank you for introducing us to the concept of this successful rebellion and for being here with us today and giving us these words of wisdom that hopefully we can do everything in our power to consciously work towards a little bit more every single day.
It's my pleasure. Thank you. And we're on this journey together.